Welcome back to the Open Source Startup Podcast. As usual, this is Tim from Essence BC and our lovely partner at Cowboy Bunchers, Robbie. We're super pumped to have the magical Tommy, the CEO of Maze.ai, which is working on a modern replacement for Airflow. So welcome, Tommy.
Thanks for having me. I'm super excited to be here. This is my favorite podcast. I remember last year, this was the thing that I was listening. I listened to probably almost every single one. So it feels really awesome to be here.
Oh, we're so glad to hear that. We've built this for other open source founders. So the fact that you're getting value out of it is huge. So if you've listened to the podcast and you know that we like to go all the way back to the beginning, and we'd love for you to tell us about the earliest days of Mage. So like, what did those look like? What was the initial product versus maybe where it's gotten to today?
Great question. I'd love to go that. Okay, so let's go back in time a little bit. So when we first started, actually, we learned a lot from our time at Airbnb. Myself, I was at Airbnb for over 5 years. My co-founder, who's our CTO as well, she was there for almost 4 years, and we worked a lot on dev tools, data tools, things like Airflow. Airbnb had a lot of great internally built data tools. And when you talk about data tools, we talk about the pipelining orchestration, but also things like for machine learning, things for data scientists as well. And so the idea of Mage was from seeing how there's all these great tools, but only a select few people really knew how to use it. So it wasn't very accessible, powerful, but not accessible. And so we left to start Mage, and our initial product was this low-code end-to-end machine learning platform that you use, and we cloud host it. So you come there, you sign up, you connect all your data sources from different places, and then we ingest it. And then you use this low-code GUI tool to do some transformation. And then we'll do the feature extraction, we'll do the aggregation, all of this. We'll create your training set. So a lot of data pipelining happening behind the scenes. And then eventually we train the model, we deploy it, et cetera. So that was our initial product. We launched a general availability in early 2022. We had a dozen paying customers. We had thousands of users signed up. It was really great. Now, however, one of the tricky parts was, I think in any startup, in any company, is really being more critical. I think we weren't critical enough early on, but eventually we got there. But I think you always got to ask yourself, is this what people need now? So there's an appetite for machine learning, an appetite for AI. Everybody wants it. It's like the cool thing. There is business impact. But when we were targeting small, medium-sized companies who didn't have machine learning expertise, they want a tool like this. We ran up into things like urgency problems. Oh yeah, we want this, but next quarter. Oh yeah, we need this. Let's hire someone first for this, or let's finish XYZ and then do this. Right? It was always that like kick it down the can kind of thing. And what we started realizing is, okay, they want to kick it down the can. Then what are they working on right now? And most of the time they're working on, oh, we need to first ingest our data. We need to transform our data. We need to do some data plumbing, data infrastructure, things like that. And so then we saw, okay, people have a more urgent need in their data architecture, in their data infrastructure journey. What can we do to help them now? And so we looked at what we built internally, and we built quite a few things. You know, this end-to-end machine learning platform, you got data pipelines, you got feature storage, you got feature model serving, all this good stuff. So we said, okay, why don't we take something that we've done, spend a couple of months preparing it to be open source, and then it's open source and see what happens. And to our great pleasant surprise, it actually is working. People need this now. People are implementing it now. People are going through all the work to set it up themselves as well. So that's the journey in a nutshell.
Yeah, a super fun journey that I was able to witness a little bit. And I'm very curious because you mentioned that companies want to solve the data plumbing problem, right? I want to make my data into something I want to use. But why go after this Airflow problem? Like, there's actually so many problems in between here. What is actually important to solve here? Like, what do you think is actually missing that? Oh, wait, this is the most critical one, right? Because Airflow does exist, right? And why modern replacement?
Great question. So Airflow is really great for, it's typically an orchestrator. It calls out to different services, goes, do this, and then that. And typically, you can use it for anything. You can use it to pass data around, to pipeline data, to move it around. You can use it to call out to different services, the train models, do X, Y, Z. You can literally do anything with it. And that's the pro, and that's also the con. So at Mage, when we were doing our intent, we had some trouble with that. We needed something that was more akin to a literal pipeline. Think of it just a tube and then data going here, here, here. and passing it along, and something's happening in between, and sometimes branching and then converging and reducing into one. So then we had to do a lot of custom stuff to handle our ML pipelines. And we did a lot of data transformations. Like, if you think about machine learning, the first 90% of it is just data, ingesting data, transforming that data. So we had a lot of experience there. Another thing is we had a lot of experience, hands-on experience, front row seats to the evolution of Airflow at Airbnb from, you know, a couple people using it to thousands of people using it. And so we saw a lot of the pros and then the struggles that other developers, software engineers, data engineers face. I would say we had an insight, unfair insight into this problem. And so it was just a natural transition or pivot for us. And as we started going more and more into this, we realized that data pipelining may sound like a niche beachhead, and that's exactly what we're focused on, but it's actually quite broad because, you know, with the explosion and, you know, this unbundling of Airflow and explosion of modern data stack, there's like a tool for every little thing, right? And so maybe that's okay for some areas, but there are some parts of the quote modern data stack that actually could have more synergy when combined. And I'm talking ingestion and transformation. Right now, you know, we think of this as split. You see like things like Fivetran, ingestion, then you think of transformation, DBT, and then you have something that orchestrates it all, Airflow, like, you know, three different tools. I understand you might want to separate some of these, right? And so that's good. You have DBT, maybe you want to get rid of Airflow, so you use DBT Cloud. There's quite a bit of synergy between all of this. Now, we're not trying to replace all of it, but there's a lot that you can do if you bring the ingestion and the transformation closer to each other.
So I want to talk a bit about your process during the pivot. So you talked about how your initial product direction, the low-code platform, there wasn't enough urgency driving it. So you had this insight based on your own work that the new direction for Mage, it was like a problem worth solving. But then how did you actually test that and make sure that you weren't like solving a problem that you guys were having, but for whatever reason, other users didn't have. And maybe this gets into your open source journey too. So kind of talk us through what you did really early.
Yes, I spoke with probably 1,000 people, maybe a little over that. So when we open sourced this, we were testing this one, the data pipeline, and then something like a data cleaning type tool as well, just side by side. And I literally talked to probably 1,000 people. I got in front of them. First, I asked them a bunch of questions. I think the question was, what's the most boring part of your data work? And that's a powerful question, I feel, because here's the thing. What I'm also seeing is, you know how people go over sexy problems or like, oh, this is a cool problem, AI this, AI that. People want to work on that. People want to get rid of the boring part, the plumbing part. And so then I realized, okay, let's ask them, what's the most boring part? Because they'll be okay with automating that or buying a tool or using it. So then after a ton of people, a lot of follow-ups, then we collected a lot of information. We actually built MVPs for some things. Some things didn't have a user interface. People love user UI, they're visual. So then we built some things like that and then got in front of people, created a Loom video, sent it to them. Then they hopped on a call with them and talked to so many people. So that's how we iterated toward, okay, validating. Let's spend a couple months more on this tool. And then let's release it. And then along the way, iteratively just keep getting it in front of people, having people use it, hop on calls with them, help them set it up, make it just painless and frictionless because, you know, people don't have that much time in the day and for them to give it up to you and it takes a lot of work to look through a tool to give you good feedback. So these people, a lot of these early users, they're just very, very nice people. And so you want to make the time worth it. So we made sure we had a good demo. We didn't have to force them to go through docs. We made it easy for them to help us. You know, like Jerry Maguire, help me help you, right? So we made that really easy.
We heard so many different like pivot stories, people trying to figure out. Actually, I think our last podcast, we were just talking about into the pivot, actually also to the open source as well. And I guess maybe it's obvious, right? Airflow is open source, you know, so obviously you have to also be open source. But, you know, as we talked to so many episodes, not all open source are equal. What does Mage open source, what you want it to look like, right? What does the community want to start? And fundamentally, is there anything different that you start, even from a community's point of view or open source point of view, that you want to be different than Airflow? Hey, I think the way we do this might be a better approach. So maybe talk a little bit about that.
I can't say what we're doing different than Airflow's community because I'm not deep in studying them. You know, Brian once told us, competitors don't kill you, your customers do. So we focus on our users. I'll tell you what we prioritize when we build and invest in our community. I actually talked to someone about this recently. Do things that don't scale. Treat everyone, everything. Don't treat things as transactions. Treat them as relationships. And so we know almost everybody. We meet with everybody. And this sounds like crazy. Like you can't scale this to 5,000 people. But you know what? Set the foundation. And maybe we don't have to create these one-on-one relationships with everyone. Maybe other people do. It's funny. I was on a Zoom call with a user yesterday. And then with their screen sharing, and I saw them chatting and exchanging help with other users in the Slack. I didn't know that, but it was awesome to see, right? And so if it stems from the core group, the early people, that type of culture, and this is a culture building. It's not just, you know, everyone thinks about company culture building, but what about community culture building? And it's all about helping people. And this just resonates from my personal experiences. One of the life lessons or career lessons I tell people in engineering and other things, help people without expectation of return. And you'll be surprised how that just improves the world around you. And so that just trickles down to the community that we have. We're very responsive. We want people to feel heard. We build things that they ask for. We take their feedback. We uplift them as well. We encourage them. And it's a virtuous cycle. So that's one thing that we really, really focus on. If other people do it, kudos to them because they're going to be servicing their users amazingly. But that's how we do it. And I hope other people do it too.
Yeah. So I want to talk a little bit about what the community is doing with Mage, because it is a pretty general tool and their actual use case could really depend on the type of company they are, how sophisticated they are, who their user specifically is, whether they're using it for like churn detection, anomaly, or like forecasting. So what was your maybe expectation when you released Mage as far as what people would use it for? And then what was the reality?
Yes, great question. If you think Mage in general, even Airflow is even more. So we actually really, really honed down on building workflows or pipelines that only deal with data. And so that limits it. A lot of people do ask, hey, can I use this for ML this, ML that? Technically you can, but we don't want to have to at least now build out the features for that. We wanted to focus. And so we say, oh no, go use like Metaflow, MFL, Kubeflow, you know, all those other flows for ML. We really focus on data pipelines. Now, initially we were thinking, okay, they'll just build data pipelines that they fetch data from one place, do some transformation, aggregate it, store it somewhere else, right? You're high code. You write a lot of code for that. Things like you would do in an Airflow DAG. One surprise that we had was a lot of people asked, I need to sync some data from here to there. So that's when I started realizing, okay, there's something called, this is called data integration. This is what, you know, people call data integration. There's things like Fivetran, Stitch, et cetera. And I asked, like, oh, well, what do you currently use? They use, oh, we use this, but everybody, they run into problems or it didn't work for them or it talked too much, hard to set up, hard to customize. And then I need this to talk to my other data pipeline. And so we quickly implemented the Singer spec, which Stitch came up with, or it's like a standard for doing this data integration. So we added support for this. And so now in Mage, you can build these, what we call batch pipelines, where it's a high code pipeline. Most people understand what that is. And then you can also build a low code data integration pipeline. Data from here to here, and then you can have your other pipeline depend on that. So when that's done, you do XYZ. So that was a surprise, and that's actually quite a bit of people use that. Some people use just that. Some people use both the standard or the batch and the data integration. Some people just use the batch one, but that was a pretty cool surprise to see.
And so maybe talk about the process of you starting Mage, like more the open source Airflow side, right? Like right now, the taglines, I'm going into the GitHub readme, the three sections of the largest difference. One is, you know, the developer experience, right? You have a basically like a local development environment you can go for. There's the preview, the test, the fast testing, right? The fast iterative feedback. And also, you know, I also really like you, don't you have a large team dedicated to Airflow, maybe easy for a small team, right? And I think, you know, we're seeing the end here. Like, what is the iteration for you to actually say, you know, like we start from here, and what did you learn and iterate towards? Now you have this. What is the first version might look like? What did you learn from that? And how do you iterate from here?
Yes, great question. So, and actually we got advice from a really awesome one of our best investors. You might know him. His name is Tim. That's you. So he helped us with this a lot. Initially, if you looked at our old GitHub, our old just documentation or product marketing, it was all about like the features here, features there. And then I met with you, and then you quickly said, okay, I read through this. I still don't get it. I was like, okay, that's a good wake-up call. And then you mentioned, here's some great examples. Think about it through the end users. Like, what is the value they're getting out of this? What's the benefit versus like what the actual features? Everyone can do feature matching, and it gets overwhelming. But then we started thinking about, okay, what are the biggest problems that we are hearing from data engineers who use these types of tools? And they service from the developer experience. So then instead of talking about features, what is the end result of a good developer experience? It's faster iterations. It's more enjoyable experience. It's more testing, et cetera. And then another one is deployment setup, all of that. A lot of people struggle with that, not only local development, but also how do you, is it the pain to get what you build locally into the cloud, and everything's on the cloud now. So really honing in on what is scaling made simple. What does that mean for an end user? You know, it means in two commands, you get what you built locally running in the cloud and every major cloud provider. So that's how we iterated. And when we think about also positioning, and Tim, you helped with this as well, analogies help people a lot. At least it helps all of us. We think about Uber for this, Airbnb for this. And then I think eventually when you're Apple, you don't need to do that, right? There's no Apple for Apple, or you're just Apple. But until then, it's really helpful to position yourself against the market leader. And actually, I learned this from a Salesforce book that Mark Benioff wrote as well, but positioning yourself against this large, maybe sometimes abstract concept. So for example, Salesforce, they position themselves against enterprise software. That sounds generic, but back in the day, that was everything. That was like, spend $100 million to get someone to come and install a ton of stuff, right? There's no such thing as fast. And so they position themselves against that. And so for us, Airflow is a big bad dog in the room. And so positioning ourselves against that, it helps someone to instantly grok. Oh, okay, you're an orchestration data pipeline tool. I know exactly what I can use you for. And then it entices them to then read the benefit. Oh, I struggle. Oh, so if I compare to Airflow, then I start thinking about my problems with Airflow. If I'm trying to replace it, I think, oh, you know what? The setup was kind of hard. Deploying was kind of hard. Ooh, testing was kind of hard. Then you go through Made and you're like, easy developer experience? Oh, check. Easy to deploy? Oh, check. Looks like my kind of tool.
Awesome. And by the way, I have to give a shout out to Tim on this because he does this with so many founders. He's like the messaging guru for like so many technical founders. So I think it's awesome that he helped with this for you. And I agree with what you're saying, because I think if you're thinking about a user, like just imagining a user who knows nothing about your product or your project, and what's the fastest way to get them from knowing nothing to something, it's almost always comparing to something else that they understand and know. So, I mean, we see this for companies that are building open source alternatives to X. Like it just helps with that initial understanding. When it comes to positioning and messaging, there's one other specific thing I wanted to ask about. On your website, you have this public demo, which is pretty unique. And I'm just wondering your process to deciding to do that. Like, was that something that users were asking for, or you saw another company do and you're like, oh, that's an awesome idea? Like, where did that come from?
I'm sure I browsed around a long time ago, and it's like a subconscious thing. I'm sure a lot of the tools that I use daily and in the past were because I was able to try it out. Now, let's say there's no online demo for an open source project. Make it so dead simple to install and use sample data. Remove as much friction as possible from someone getting started. So that's number one. The next step to that is having a live demo. And so I'm sure in the past I've tried other tools and still use them. And it's because I was able to do something with it. So that's where we came up with that demo. In addition to that, people have asked, can I just try out something online? Because when we were meeting with people, I would go to them. I'd say, okay, let's set this up. And let's say they weren't initially interested, but they are forced to install everything and go through like 15 minutes or something just to give me feedback. Instead, okay, hey, let's meet. Here's the URL. Great. No setup. Now you can use it. I can show you and you can give me instant feedback. So it also helped create even faster feedback loop as well. So there's a lot of benefits that I would highly recommend. I think every tool out there can. Actually, I was talking to another portfolio company of yours, Tim, about this. They're an open source tool. There's no GUI around it or anything. But I said, you know what? Come up with a contrived example, like a basic web app, a Google Sheet, whatever, and just let people interact with your library without having to install it or set it up, give them fake data. And it works magic. Engineers are just, they're very hands-on. When we read a book, we need to code while we're reading or else it'll never stick. So when you actually use a tool, that's when the magic happens. You're like, that's how it works.
Yeah, that's awesome to hear. And so I think the one of the most common questions, because as an engineer myself and knowing about this space, right, there are other airflow alternatives actually, right, that has probably done more work before you. And how do you actually, do you compare yourself to like all the other alternatives eventually when you talk to customers? Or do you try to like stick to really, really stand out, right? And then do you think that that really is the most important? And I was just, you know, just very curious, like navigating this airflow space, mm-hmm. I feel like beyond this big, you know, behemoth, there are other players in this space that are getting pretty hot as well, right? And so,
yep.
Maybe figure out how to navigate those overall. I'm curious about your philosophy and maybe even lessons learned so far.
Very good question, because I do have some learnings and lessons on this. You know, in the beginning, we're like taught to go after blue ocean, nothing's out there, or, oh, this is super saturated, don't go after that. And I think these are okay advices for entrepreneurs. And sometimes it kind of stops an entrepreneur from going down a route inadvertently, but going through this process, I actually realized something. And talking to over a thousand people, the truth of the matter is, unless you're Apple or Microsoft, not one place dominates everything. Majority of the world's problem is distribution. It's awareness. And so most of the people you talk to will never have heard of 90% of the competitors you lose your sleep over. So don't lose sleep over them. Think of the one big thing. Like, if you think of airflow, I talk to a ton of people. Yes, the simple majority of them know about it, use it, but it's not even over 50%. And then the long tail, the rest of the percentages, like people use some random stuff or don't use it at all. So I would say, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to take on something giant. And don't be afraid if there's a long tail of tools out there, chances are like 100 people have heard of it. And the people that you talk to probably will never have heard of it, right? So just focus on, again, like Brian, you taught me at Airbnb, your competitors don't kill you, your customers do. So just focus on the ones that love you, they're early adopters, and then grow from there and just wow them. And so that's the lesson that I would share people, and that's how we navigate.
As it pertains to competitors, I wanted to ask about your content strategy, because you did start writing pieces like Mage versus Airbyte, Mage versus Fivetran. And did those come from like user-generated like questions about us versus others? Or like, this kind of dovetails into your content strategy in general, but like specifically interested in the ones you've written to compare to other kind of players you're competing with.
Yes, I have a huge opinion on this. So you ever watch Samsung commercials? They're always talking about Apple. You ever watch Apple commercials? They are never talking about anybody else. So here's the thing. We have different theories or franchises of our content. Almost 99% of it is educational. So we have two pillars. It's educational and entertaining. There's too much content out there. You can't just be educational. You got to be entertaining. So we try to be very, very engaging, entertaining in our content, or we don't publish at all. We create helpful content. We don't try to sell ourselves. As an engineer, I automatically just stop reading something if they're just trying to shill something even their own. So I really appreciate the ones where they're actually being helpful. And then once I use their content a couple of times, I'm like, okay, this company's legit. Like, I've learned so much from them. Even if I never heard of them before, I will just automatically start using them over other well-known ones that have given me no value. Like, as a company, as a product, why not give value even without being a customer, right? I think that's the best foot in the door. Okay, so then let's go back to why we wrote those. We wrote those, one, SEO, okay? So, and then two, very low effort. And then three, it's just something that you do for SEO. And then the third one is, yes, people ask. So why don't we write Mage versus XYZ, all the long tail 100? Just, you know, maybe people have asked, but they just haven't asked enough. And so we just figured, okay, well, we have some time. Why don't we just write this out? So it was low effort. If it took longer, we probably wouldn't have done it, just because I still don't think that's that valuable, in the sense that it's okay educationally. It's not very entertaining. It's kind of dry reading it. If you look at everybody else, it's pretty dry. Maybe we should actually make it entertaining. But something like that is more of a, people use it to go to their manager or go to like a sales material kind of thing, right? And we don't actually have sales right now. So we'll limit our amount on that, but it's more for SEO.
Yeah. I think SEO, and also it's probably a question that everybody will probably wonder. But this is kind of interesting, because Airflow isn't compared to Airbyte or Fivetran, right? People say use Airflow and Fivetran, or use Airflow with Airbyte. And now you have Mage that is in the middle of everything. And maybe I wonder, is it because your target users really just want one tool and you believe that the bundling effect, maybe talk about the bundling effect, but how does connectors plus the Airflowness or your mageness in this case, right, are able to create something even better because they're together? I wonder, do you just have a more comprehensive feature list? Or you're like, hey, actually connectors actually comes into play when I'm doing the pipelines, right? There's actually an iterative loop that can even help both sides. I just wonder, what does that bundle magical experience might look like?
It's exactly the latter that you just said. At a very high level, you're going through 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 steps. Data ingestion is typically 2 to 3. It's source, maybe a transformation in the middle, and then the destination. If you look at data pipelines, what most people are doing is, again, source, but sometimes it's a very esoteric coded source. You want to load data from a file, XYZ. You don't need this low code, no code, templated ingestion connector that these other tools have. And then again, in a normal pipeline, it's just passing data around and the data eventually ends up somewhere, right? Again, a destination, an esoteric destination using custom code. So at a higher level, they're actually conceptually the same. In terms of implementation, they share some implementation. There are slight technical differences I won't go into, but there are slight differences. But everything around it is overlapping. The monitoring, the alerting, the observability, the metric, the retry, the dynamic aspect of it, interpolation, all of that, they're the same thing. So you get a lot of synergy. You get economies of scale working on both of these. And so there's synergy between it. Supporting one lifts the other. A high tide raises all ships. That's why we have that. Now, if it drove us into different directions, we would definitely not do that because that would split our focus. But actually, it harnesses our focus and they actually build on each other or off of each other.
Awesome. So I want to make sure that we have time to talk about the like product and business side of things and kind of talk through your pricing strategy. One of the things that a lot of open source project owners who turn those projects into companies struggle with is figuring out the right time to start monetizing and also like what model makes sense for their community. So can you walk us through your process for figuring that out and also timing, like when you wanted to start trying to monetize?
One thing that might seem at odds, and I'm sure everybody, all of our users, there's a group that wants cloud hosted, there's a group that wants to self-host, and they always ask, hey, are you going to abandon us when you start monetizing? Are you going to stop focusing on that? Because they know a lot of the tools eventually do that. And this might sound counterintuitive, but we're going to continue making it so easy for you to self-host that you won't need the cloud hosted version. Because I see a lot of tools out there, they make it really hard to self-host, actually. It's almost like a checkbox on their to-do list, like allow self-hosting, okay, and then check off, and then just never make it really easy for them to self-host. Like make it as complex, add 10 services so that they have to launch 10 different containers, right? So we won't do that. We'll keep focusing on making it easier and easier. And there'll always be the group that wants to self-host as well. So in terms of how we'll monetize, there's a couple of things you could do. You could do seat-based, or you can do, actually, it will probably be compute-based just because, let's say I have one seat, but then I'm running 10,000 pipelines, like, you know, that doesn't work like that. So it'll most likely be compute-based. Now, there's three ways you monetize. One is a cloud-hosted version. We'll provide a cloud-hosted version. And then two, we'll provide a hybrid deployment where you can use your own compute, and then we'll just have the control plane and then help manage that for a fee. And then three, an enterprise-specific build. Now, the third part would be, it has to be very, very, very esoteric features. We don't want to get to a place where there's features that we feel like, oh, we can monetize off of one single sign-on. Oh, but so many other companies would love single sign-on. Oh, but let's stick that in the enterprise build so we can make more money. You know, that goes against what we stand for as well. So we'll have to think about that, but that's our third, that would be our third revenue path. And then in terms of timing, so we're fortunate that we have amazing investors who are patient, who see the long game. People like Tim, Neo, Gradient, the Design Fund, all these people. And so they understand that a tool like this isn't something you just switch off of frequently. It's not a task management tool or a chat tool. This is something where it takes some thought, it takes some time and a commitment to do and to bring your whole team on and to build your entire data, you know, platform on top of in the future. And so what's important is making sure the early adopters, the users are supported. They have all the features they need. It's very easy for them to use. And through that process, this becomes top of mind for every data engineer. It becomes the de facto. It becomes the place that people, the tool that people actually enjoy to use. And then only once we focus enough on that and have that really, really solid, then we focus on monetization, because once you become that de facto top of mind tool for people, that just stays top of mind for them. And that's something that you capturing early on is, it can lead to longevity.
Yeah, it's really impressive to see you since the pivot to now just gunning for it, the whole team, you know, getting this amount of traction really, really quickly. I don't think it's as easy at all to do this. So I'm actually moving it towards a little bit of sort of like a more personal learnings for you, because pivots are never easy, right? There's a lot of strategic identity, right? What do we do? But also, even just from a team perspective, right? Keeping the team actually still motivated, because it took that long to build the prior thing. Just say we're switching to a new thing, right? That's definitely not easy at all. What is the things you've learned? You know, now you ran through this yourself. What are the lessons you learned doing this as a founder?
Pivots are definitely hard, because sometimes it could feel like, well, no one signed up for this, or you put so much energy and emotion and love into the previous product or the previous branding of it, or there's just so much around that. And then like to switch off, as a founder, as a leader, you're always afraid, you know, the team is no longer excited. They don't believe in that. There's all these worries, and you actually question yourself, do I believe in it? Is this what I signed up for? And so a lot of things that I think about is, what can you retain no matter what the product is? And it's a sense of mission. For us, it was always about making technology, data technology, AI technology more accessible to developers, because what gives us juice is seeing people's lives improve. Now that sounds generic, but what I mean by that is actually making your work easier, even by a percent, making your work more enjoyable. And so that really drives us. Now, can we deliver that with an AI tool? Yes, if that worked. Can we deliver it with other tools? Yes. Now then, if that's the mission, that the overall thing that drives us maintains, then we can, although difficult, still try other products and tools and not change the identity or the motivation why we joined this team. And another tip that I would do, or what I learned, is be super transparent. Now, you don't want to be, okay, we're going down this route. No one say, tell me anything. This is just, we're going. You can't be that far on one team. But it's also not everyone throwing your ideas into a hat and let's see what happens. No, people look for direction, but people want to be involved with, it's like the end journey. People want to be involved in that journey as well, but they do want some pointers. You know, it doesn't have to be like this straight line. It can be in the general direction. And so we involved the entire team early on. We were being very transparent with it early on. Have metrics, go over metrics. We go over this all the time. We ask real questions like, hey, these are our metrics. It's not hitting. What's wrong? Okay, this isn't working. So then we would do sprints. We'd be like, okay, let's do just AI for this industry. Okay, so then we spent like 2-3 weeks for creating content about that, reaching out to people, just trying to invalidate it. And then we did that for another one. And then we say, okay, this is work. So we're really real with ourselves. And then we started asking partner questions. Okay, let's talk to a bunch of people, right? So we collected a lot of information and we presented it to the team. And we're like, okay, they're talking about this. They're talking about this. This isn't working. And everyone was a part of it. So everyone felt, actually, I would say they had more to do with the direction of the company after this pivot than people early on when we first started the company. So if anything, I think it probably made people more excited. And so we came out of this really, really stronger. And, you know, they say it's not the positive events in life that bring people close to that. Everyone can celebrate something, right? It's not the negative events in life and how you get through them that bring you really closer. So it was a really transformational experience for us. It was super hard and probably some of the lowest points in my life, but I'm just thankful for an amazing team, amazing investors, amazing community. You know, we're getting through it.
Awesome. I think those are some awesome learnings. I, in particular, love this concept of just measuring and testing and iterating, because I think too often pre-product market fit founders can just kind of keep doing the same things or changing things slightly, but not really measuring and keeping themselves accountable to what's working. I wanted to ask about you being a second-time founder. So you've been a founder once before. I think it got up to like 30 people. So you've managed people, helped hire, I'm sure did a lot of things for the first time then. What did you learn then from your first experience being a founder that you brought into Mage?
So I knew nothing during that time. It was my first time. It was super fun. It was really great. some things I learned, culture building and team building. So I experienced a lot of Airbnb team building, a lot of team building, a lot of more personal team buildings, getting more involved in people's lives, things like that. I saw a lot of that play out at Airbnb. So I learned what not to do in that sense. Another thing I learned on my block was we didn't fail fast enough. We dragged something out. We dragged it out. You know, we had funding. We weren't critical enough about our goals. And so that was something I learned this time around. Now, could we have been more critical this time around sooner? Absolutely. But everything happened, you know, the way it had to. And I'm just so thankful that we did that at the time that we did versus waiting out like the mistake I made in the first time around.
So I guess last question for me is, what advice do you give other open source founders? You know, you went through this journey and you have a particular interesting journey. And we talked a little about learning points, but maybe something that somebody else wants to go start an open source company. And in particular, your case, you do have an incumbent here in some way. What is the advice you give to them to start a brand new open source company?
If it was someone who, let's say they have an idea for a project, they want to create open source, they want to grow amongst developers, I would say no matter where you're at, people. So let's start with that word. People is something that should be top of mind for you. Actually, no, because I don't want to say that you should start talking to people. You should start asking them questions because now you're trying to extract value out of people before giving them value. So it needs to start sooner. You need to see how you can help people first. Do that for some time. Then eventually you will be helped. And so if you want to start tomorrow, okay, I guess you can go start talking to people now. But if you're building up to it, I would say, you know, invest in people. See who you can help first. See people at work you can help, other founders you can help, other people in other industries, what we can help with. Give them your time. And then you understand how difficult that could be because you were on the other side. And then when you're asking for that help, you can sympathize and you can understand how much value they're giving you back. So I would say start helping people. That will open up doors as well. You'll get introductions to people as well. People will start coming to you for help as well. So start with that. I would say that's the biggest thing in any business, especially probably open source. Since engineers, developers are a unique bunch.
Awesome. I think that's a really good spot for us to end. Tommy, thank you so much. It was so great having you on the podcast. You're just a wonderful human and such an awesome founder. So we really appreciate it. And I think our audience will enjoy this as well.
Thank you so much. I love being here. I hope I can be invited back in the future. Thank you so much for having me. Keep doing these things. It helped me on this journey because during that pivot, you know, I knew nothing about open source. So this was the main resource for me. So please keep doing it.